You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob, here with you on Community Radio Station 3CR, and this is a Friday rave.
All right, that's right, it's Friday afternoon, and you're listening, if indeed you are listening, to Community Radio, Radical Radio 3CR, with me, Jacob, and a Friday rave. Today, I've joined in the studio, something that doesn't happen very often, so I've got to be on I'm not very professional, but I've got to be on my best professional behaviour, because I'm joined by someone who wears plenty of other hats, author, activist, and radio broadcaster, all the way from the United States. David Swanson is a author of several books on war and the badness thereof, I've got to say. He's the bloke behind World Beyond War and a whole lot of other websites, I think democrats.org. But anyway, we'll talk about that maybe. David, welcome to Community Radio 3CR.
Thank you very much, Jacob. And yes to World Beyond War, and hell no to the democrats.org. That's a political party of a government that I take absolutely no pride in or identify with in any way, shape, or form. So no to that one.
I thought I saw your name associated with the Progressive Democrats or something a couple of years back.
Many, many years back, and I lost the ability to stomach either the term progressive or the term Democrats. So, times change.
I'm in a similar situation with the term progressive and the term Labor Party, so I understand exactly where you're coming from.
Yes, indeed. It's going around.
Yeah, but I asked you on the show today because we got an email at 3CR with your name and number on it, talking about COP27, which is happening at Sharm el-Sheikh on the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt next month. And there's some continuing concern, I've got to add, about the fact that all these people are getting together talking about military emissions and its effect on global emissions and its effect on climate change, but no one wants to include the military in those discussions. And last year in Glasgow, we had Lindsay Cottrell on a Friday rave talking to us, but we also had a couple of people up in Glasgow as part of the alternative, the fringe conference, I guess you'd call it. What's the current situation, David, with the military emissions gap?
Well, I guess as we can tell by the number, this is going to be the 27th annual meeting where government's representatives get together under the aegis of the United Nations and at least pretend to commit to having their grandchildren someday do something about the destruction of the Earth's climate. It took us really until the 26th one last year in Glasgow, Scotland, to get together in any major way to demand that they stop leaving militaries out of what climate agreements they do produce, because radically inadequate as they are, they leave out, and don't mention that they are leaving out, one of the biggest destroyers of the Earth's climate, militaries and their wars and their preparations for wars and their testing of weapons for wars. So we had, as you know, a big coalition of groups from all over the world, people with banners and microphones and speeches and rallies outside of COP26. Mm. And so the step forward, everybody has to find the progress and the optimism. The step forward, if it is one, is that there are now two or three events inside the official happenings of COP27 talking about militarism and the climate. Now, I would have preferred for the progress to be that governments actually put militaries into their climate agreements, reported what climate destruction their militaries were doing. And in order to meet, which ultimately is what has to happen, which is why they're dragging their feet about putting militaries into the climate agreements. But at least we've got people inside the meetings. And to what extent you can do it in the Egyptian police state, we're going to have people talking and rallying outside the meetings as well.
Yes, and I've spoke to someone who's going to be at a, I'm not sure if it's a rally or a meeting or a protest or what it's going to be, but it's going to be after the event.
Yeah,
not even sure that it's Cairo, in Sharm. I think it's going to be in Cairo.
Yeah, there is going to be a big event in the days after COP27 in Cairo. A little bit odd to make demands of governments after they've had their meeting, but you do what you can, and the people of Egypt have to figure out what it makes sense to do and what it doesn't, given the fact that you can get yourself thrown in prison and tortured and rot there for the rest of your life quite easily. If you go to worldbeyondwar.org/COP27, COP27, you'll find everything that we've been able to find out about what's happening around the world in the lead up to COP27 and petitions you can sign and what's happening in Egypt.
Right, great. So that's worldbeyondwar.org, folks. Get out your laptops, get out your mobile devices, have a look at that. And it is heating up. Now, it's very strange to me because, you know, I mean, we don't need to talk to a Friday Rave or indeed 3CR regular listeners about the fact that the military is the largest destroyer of the environment and the largest producer of climate change in the world. But it seems strange to me because as early as I think it was 2010, 2012 maybe, a Pentagon report came out talking about climate change being one of the most serious threats to global stability because of the movement of people across borders, because of the effects of climate change and on crops, not to mention, of course, sea level rises on military bases because, you know, most militaries, the United States and therefore by, what's the word, in a de facto sense, Australia, who's just like a little United States. So we're always having a fight with Canada over who's the 51st state, but I think with AUKUS, it shows we are, that a lot of their military bases are based at sea level. We're talking about places like Guam and Diego Garcia and, of course, Hawaii and Okinawa and up in Darwin and of course, on the east and west coast of the United States. So they're aware of the effects of climate change, but it seems to be sort of like we know this is happening and we are contributing to it, but don't include us in the figures. So it's almost like a dog chasing its tail, I dare say.
Well, there's lots of phony greenwashing. There's lots of pretense that you're going to make the military green. They're always developing electric tanks and so forth. But, you know, there are a couple of problems here. One, many of us would oppose the organized mass killing of human beings and destruction of the earth, even if it were environmentally done, right? Even if you were destroying the land and the water and the people and their homes with fuel-efficient, green, recycled airplanes, you know, the other problem, of course, is that you aren't. It's not real. They don't have, solar powered electric airplanes. It's not happening, and the third problem is that the money that they put into the military, a tiny fraction of it would exceed the wildest dreams of any environmental organization or advocate or politician on the earth. You know, a Green New Deal, a massive attempt to slow and impede the climate collapse and the destruction of the ecosystems would take a fraction of the money that's going into the militarism to, so to say, give us a little bit more and we'll make some electric. You know, this is not the answer. The answer is to move the resources.
Exactly. Well, it says, you know, President Eisenhower, I think his famous valedictory speech, where he said every warship made, every rocket launched is a, what is it, a threat to those who almost Christ-like, who hunger and aren't fed, you know? And and climate change wasn't an issue, of course, back in 1960, 61, whenever he made that speech. But I'm sure that had he been aware of the effects of the coming climate crisis, he would have included its effects on the climate.
No, let's be clear that that speech and the speech in which he says military-industrial complex are two different speeches. The one about the theft from those who hunger was said before his presidency. The one about the military-industrial complex is corrupting everything was said at the end of his presidency.
That was the valedictory.
And during the course of his presidency, he acted darn well as if he'd never thought of either one of those.
He was a general after all.
So, you know, this. He was a general who decided you could do war on the cheap and let's have a coup in Iran and see what comes of that. Let's have a coup in Guatemala, see what comes of that. Let's have a Cold War with the Soviets and then complain about it when I leave office. So, you know, what he would have done, I don't know. But what he should have done,
what he would have said.
I mean, we've known about this. What he would have said, okay, yeah.
Like yeah, I'm not trying to paint Eisenhower as some sort of answer to our problems, but it was a pretty telling and a pretty concise speech on the effects of the military, I guess is the point I was making and the lost opportunity. You know, we can't afford to do any of the climate changing, socially beneficent thing that would mitigate against climate change, but we can afford to go to Ukraine. And of course, Ukraine again, it's the war's building up. People are talking about it escalating to a nuclear war. No one quite believes it, but they're talking about it almost like to heavyweight contenders dissing each other, dancing around saying, one saying I'm gonna punch him out, and the other one saying I'm not worried about him. That seems to be the level of discourse that's happening, that's coming down from our political leaders.
And all of the politicians in the United States, every single one of them, and the media even worse, the major corporate media outlets even worse, will not allow one word in favor of a ceasefire or negotiations or compromise. It's all about winning and conquering and deterring and making the other side lose. And there is no other option. And of course, the president of Ukraine has announced, I will not negotiate anything with anyone. You know, this is what we're looking at. And I've seen polls in the United States, of parts of the United States, where you have three quarters or more, 80% of people worried that this is going to become a nuclear apocalypse, but only two thirds or half willing to accept any sort of compromise or negotiation. Yeah. So, you know, where's that? Who are those people in that gap who think we're going to end all life on the planet, but we shouldn't compromise? Our primary objective should be destroying Vladimir Putin.
And as regular listeners would know, I'm no fan of Vladimir Putin's, but it's not really as if, and I've said this before, it's not as if there was some pleasant little social democracy called Ukraine that was, you know, going along its nice pleasant valley way like Hobbiton, and all of a sudden this evil Hitler-esque Putin, for no reason whatsoever, decided to just out of the blue one morning invade Ukraine, which is what the mainstream narrative, the mainstream media seem to be telling us in simplistic terms.
But if humanity survives, it could survive for thousands and thousands of years into the future. Nobody need remember the name Vladimir Putin. It's going to be a tiny little footnote to a footnote in an obscure history text. Yes. Instead, you want to take this little jerk and make him the reason to end all life on the planet? Mm-hmm. This is elevating him to the highest pedestal. This is not anti-Vladimir Putin. This is insanity.
It's crazy. And of course, you know, in Australia, with a couple of years ago or a few years ago now, we an Australian organisation that I'm a part of, ICAN, International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, got the Nobel Peace Prize, even though the Nobel Peace Prize has been quite discredited recently.
I said they got it right. That year, every year I say they got it wrong. That year I said they got it right.
That year we got it right. But yeah, the threat of nuclear war looms large in the Australian environmental and peace community, such as it is. And that's, well, not just because this is where I can come from, but that's why this is where I can come from here. But it's even without nuclear war, because frankly, if that happens, we can just put our head between our knees. Things like the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipeline in the Baltic Sea, which, you know, it seems to everyone except, you know, BBC, ABC and CNN, was attacked by the United States. And that's releasing, I think, a tad under 2 million pounds of methane per hour into the atmosphere. And that's just one little aspect. And then you talk about the bridge that was blown up. You talk about the Russian attacks on Kyiv and other cities. You talk about the Ukrainian attacks. It's the effects as they are now, without winning or losing, are catastrophic to the environment, to the biosphere of the planet we're sitting on, don't you think?
I do. Potentially the effects on food shortages, certainly the effects on the climate, and even more so, the effects on impeding the absolutely essential cooperation of the world to actively address the environment, the disease pandemics, poverty, homelessness. We're unable to take on the non-optional crises that we ought to be dealing with in a global manner and can only deal with in a global manner because the world is divided by the stupidity of war. And with all the money going into the war machine and the war blocking any cooperation, the environmental and human destruction that the war does is just, you know, the icing on top of that poisonous cake.
Yeah, well, I mean, we often talk about the military's effect on the environment as if the people weren't a part of the environment.
Indeed. We have to live in it.
and unfortunately, I remember when we first went into Iraq and I tried to get one of the major, I won't name them now because their lines changed, one of the major Australian environmental organisations on board. And they asked me to write a paper on how this war could potentially affect the environment. And at that point, I said, look, sorry, guys, I'll do it without you. Yeah. Yeah, there seems to be this disconnect, but like as if there was this destruction of war on the one hand on cities and people and families and cultures, and that is somehow even separate to its effect on the environment, which we're trying to address, and that's and I think we start on that by talking about the inexorable link between the two. Like the good people are doing at COP27 next month, isn't it? The beginning of November.
Or middle of November or so. Yeah, and there's no question that war is a top destroyer of earth, land, and water where it happens, and of the global climate. But even say the U.S. military, which supposedly wages all these distant wars for the benefit of the little corner of the world called the United States, is the top destroyer of the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, is the vast majority of the environmental disaster sites that they call the Superfund sites are military bases.
Of course.
The third biggest polluter of U.S. waterways is the U.S. military. The top proliferator of these poisons called forever chemicals, PFAS chemicals, is the U.S. military. Yep. One of the top polluters of air, certainly the top noise polluter, the top destroyer of places like national and state parks is the U.S. military. And one of the top sources of illegal guns in the United States, and certainly the source of the militarization of police in the United States. I mean, war is this poisonous gift that never stops giving, and people have to lose their minds to allow it. Rational people would not allow this. You know, this picture behind me of a Russian soldier hugging a Ukrainian soldier had to be taken off a wall in Melbourne, Australia,
yes,
because people were offended by hugging.
Yeah.
They found it traumatic. They were traumatized by hugging, right?
Pizza.
They want a picture of two guys carving each other up with knives, blood and guts flying.
Oh, there's plenty of that happening in Melbourne, mate. When that happened, the guy made a public apology, and he was called an appeaser. He was likened to Neville Chamberlain in the local media. It was absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. And look, just as if for local listeners, don't sit there and smirk at how bad the US military is, because while we're nowhere near as militarized a society as the United States, we find the same situation here. Just the end of August, beginning of September, we had an exercise Pitch Black, which saw 115 aircraft, dozens of tanks doing live firing exercises in the north part of the Northern Territory, some of the most pristine wilderness we have left in this country, was being used as a war in a war game scenario with the ultimate aim of basically invading tropical third world countries.
World Beyond War. We have a board member from Australia named Alison Bronowski, who is part of a group that's been working for years on war powers reform in Australia.
Yep.
And they have finally got the government to agree to hold hearings on so-called war powers reform, while the government is announcing that they're going to send troops over to Ukraine to just do some good philanthropic training of troops to murder people. This ought to be a moment for Australians to say, okay, which is it going to be? Are our elected so-called representatives or us as people going to have any say over this madness or not?
Those discussions,
the United States, we almost back in the...
I was going to say those discussions are taking place, and when we finally got the Australians for War Powers Reform, finally got the government to make those concessions, Alison came on and had a yarn with me on this show, and of course the War Powers Bill for local listeners is something we've been working on for a long time. A very dear friend of mine used to be an Australian Senator, Scott Ludlam from the Greens, and was really pushing that bill. I think the Democrats started it before the Greens existed, but it's been something we've been pushing and pushing and pushing. And much like COP27, where now they're allowed us to talk inside the tent, for the first time. Australians for War Powers Reform have now got to the point where they're going to be allowed to talk inside the tent about the possibility, just having some hearings about where we go with this.
Yeah, yeah, very similar step forward. We need a now few more steps.
We've taken a step forward. Now just watch us take two steps back.
I hope not.
Yeah. But look, we're running out of time, David. But any message to the peace activists and other organisers listening to a Friday rave, because a lot of them do in Australia?
Keep doing what you're doing. Get those war powers into the hands of the people in order not to have proper wars, but to have no wars. Know what you're doing and get involved with what we're doing, and try to get offended by killing, not by hugging. Hugging should be okay.
Oh, yes. It's a shame that that's what put Melbourne on the map. But anyway, David, thanks for joining us at Community Radio 3CR. Yes, you're listening to Community Radio 3CR, where we were joined by the executive director, no less, of the World Beyond War project over in the US, David Swanson. And you can check out more of World Beyond War's work at worldbeyondwar.org. Simple enough, isn't it? And while you're on the web, go to 3cr.org.au and have a look around some of our other fine programs and see what's happening. And of course, if you haven't done so already, subscribe, because community radio needs your support, as does Black Sparks.
Black Spark is an independent, volunteer-run bookshop, gallery, music and community space in Northcote, Narm, dedicated to creativity, learning and liberation.
Black Spark is a space for the entire community, free of charge, hosting art, music and literary events.
To keep Black Spark free, open and accessible to everybody, we need your help.
We are calling for your support for our rent fundraiser to keep our doors open into the coming years.
With your support, we can continue to host book and exhibition launches, art auctions, fundraisers, music gigs, and facilitate opportunities and growth for emerging artists and grassroots communities.
For more information, visit Keep Black Spark Alive on chuffed.com or check out Black Spark on all the socials.
Keep Black Spark Alive!
A 3CR supporter.
That's all I've got time for this week. Next week, we'll be joined in the virtual studio known as my laptop by Clinton Fernandez. Long-time listeners would be aware of Clinton's work. He's been a frequent guest on this show, and this time he's talking about his book. Well, he's not talking about his book. Hopefully, we'll be talking about the concepts he talks about in his book, that of Australia being a sub-imperial power. But in the meantime, I can't be in Melbourne on Saturday, but if you can be in Melbourne on Saturday, you should get down to the Kindred Studios, the Kindred Band Room down there in Footscray for Solidarity Sound Systems 10-year celebration. Yep, 10-year. 10 years ago, Joe and friends started the Solidarity Sound System, and you'll know them from all the big protests, whether it's, a couple of stand-up PA boxes, or whether it's a whole kit on the back of a truck, or whether it's going up and down the rally at the Invasion Day rallies. Solidarity Sound System is there whenever they're needed. So be there, show some support. Solidarity, 10-year celebration, Kindred Studios, from 5 o'clock at the Kindred Band Room down there in Footscray. You can find where it is. I'll talk to you more next week.